First of all, question number one is, why did Hashem harden Paro's heart? Okay, why did Hashem harden Paro's heart? It's one of the most difficult questions that many Rishonim have difficulty with. Why punish Paro, Mitzrayim, if Hashem is hardening his heart? Why is there punishment? He's taken away his free will, and yet he's punished for it. Question number two. This is something that I believe we didn't deal with, but it was dealt with early in the year. I'm going to try to look at it from a different angle. But what do you do when there's a machlokas in Midrashim? Okay, you have a medrash. Not really the Midrashim, that seem to be arguing with each other, and they're arguing in what we call a machloket in Mitziut, or Mitzius. And what happened? Okay, you have a machlokes. For example, you have beginning in next week's parsha. It says in the beginning of Bishalach, it says Chamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. Okay, the Jewish people left Egypt Chamushim. What does Chamushim mean? And remember what Rashi says? Chamushim. What? Armed. Okay, that's one.
One fifth of them.
One fifth of the Jewish people left. What happened to the other? Four-fifths?
Gotcha.
They died in Makas Choshech. Okay? So there's one opinion in the Medrash says Chamushim means Mizuyanim, which means they were armed. They left with weapons. And another opinion in the Medrash, by the way, says that they were armed, Chamushim, they were armed with five different weapons. Okay? So that's like two different, but okay, it's like one. One opinion says there were one-fifth of Jewish people left Egypt. The 80% of the Jewish people died in Makas Choshech. Another opinion of the Medrash says 1/50th of the Jewish people left Egypt. And at 98% of the Jewish people died in Makas Choshech. Another opinion of the Medrash says 1 out of 500 of the Jewish people left Egypt. And then there's a fifth opinion in the Medrash that says that five times the amount of Jewish people joined the Jewish people and left Mitzrayim. In other words, they had all these people that wanted to join, Gerim, non-Jews who wanted to join the Jewish people when they saw what God is capable of, the God of the Jews, and taking out of Egypt. So they had five times the amount of Jewish people joined them and became like the Erev Rav. So you have here five very, very different opinions, and they're basically mutually exclusive. Or maybe they all were armed also, so that's not. But the other four, mutually exclusive opinions. What do you do with that? How do you explain such a machlokes? It's a machlokes in what happened. Question number three is in this week's parsha, Parsha's Bo, we have the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem. Right, the mitzvah of sanctifying the new moon, of really using the moon to determine, to establish time. When the moon looks like this, then you establish a new month. And this is really the first mitzvah that the Jewish people are given as a people, as a nation. Chodesh Hazeh Lechem. Which brings us to the first Rashi in the Torah. Right? What was the question of the first Rashi in the Torah? Anyone remember?
Why does the Torah start from creation?
Should start from this week's Parsha. This is where everything should begin. HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem, Rosh Chodeshim. The first mitzvah of the Torah was HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem. That's where the Torah should begin. Why does it start from creation? So the question is, the Gemara, and Rashi quotes the Medrash, Rabbi Yitzhak, and gives the answer. Because Hashem wanted to tell, Koach Ma'asav Yigid La'Amo, wanted to tell his people about his creation, and that he created the world. And just like he created the world, he decided to give Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. He took it away from the Canaanites, gave it to the Israelites. And this is the way we'll be able to answer those who ask, how can you people settle in the land of Israel? It doesn't belong to you. The question: what is the Hamamina here? What is the Maskana? What's the question? What the Torah should start with? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the Hamamina? And what changed in our understanding that in the Maskana? No, because we want it. Hashem has to tell us so we can tell the United. We can walk to the United Nations and say that, you know, we're not giving back any land of Israel, any back to anybody. This belongs to us, even though God, once maybe other people lived here, now belongs to us. God gave it to us. What exactly is the Havim Maskana there? So that's three questions. Question number four is, we are planning a trip to Poland, which coming up, the deadline to sign up for that trip is coming up, I think, in a week or so. Question of why are we going back to Poland? There's so many people who ran away from Poland, who managed to get away from Poland, who survived the Holocaust, and will never step foot in Poland. I met somebody... very interesting person last week in Las Vegas, and somebody who is involved with an organization in Israel. Called Yashar L'Chayal, which we're actually hopefully going to do some programming with. An organization that goes to the Chayalim and gives them things that they need that they don't have on their own, like warm clothing, gloves, scarves, etc. And we're going to hopefully do some programming with him. He's a very interesting guy who works for the Moskowitz family, which is one of the big philanthropists. Lives in Florida, but they give a tremendous amount of money here in Israel. So I invited him to join us our trip to Poland, and he said, "No, I'm never going there." You know, he's been to Berlin, he's been to other places, but he's never going back to Poland. And I understand it. Many people feel that way, feel the same way. Many people, survivors, say, how can you guys go back to Poland? Why are we going there? Why go to Poland? So, in order to answer these four questions, let's ask one more question. And that is, why do we have a mitzvah? We have a mitzvah, actually, a daily mitzvah, to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have a mitzvah to remember every day. We have a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. We mentioned in Kriyat Shema, we mentioned it a few times a day. Okay? And there are many, many mitzvahs that are there to remind us of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Many mitzvahs. Rabbi Yehuda mentioned today one of them, that you can't, mitzvah not to break the bones when you're eating Korban Pesach, is a mitzvah of Kiddush. Besides the daily mitzvah of Tizkor, to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, we also have a mitzvah once a year, mitzvah L'Saper, Yetzias Mitzrayim. And why do we have so many things to remind us of Yetzias Mitzrayim? So, my first year that I was teaching, young guy, wet behind the ears, taught a yeshiva called Reish Yerushalayim, which at the time was in Yerushalayim, in the old city. Hence the name Reish Yerushalayim, now it's just Reish, or Reishis. And then it was, I taught a little bit, but like first full-time teaching experience. Had a lot of very interesting morning share. Really interesting group of guys. One of the guys I had in shul was actually a very bright guy. And in our discussions, came out that he doesn't believe in Mashiach. Doesn't buy it. Doesn't make any sense that there's going to be a Messiah, it's going to come, and the whole world's going to believe in a person. Look at the world today. Look at the world. How much war there is in the world, how much divergent opinions. It's going to be one person that can possibly, you know, lead this world to a redemption. Didn't believe in such a thing. So as much as trying to argue with him, and I had fantastic arguments, he didn't budge. Now this is an important thing. Believing Mashiach is actually one of the fundamentals of our faith. It's very important. In fact, according to the Rambam, if you don't believe in Mashiach, you don't have a chelek in Olam Haba. You can believe in everything else. You can keep all the mitzvos. But if you don't believe in Mashiach, you are disconnected from the next world. So this is a very important thing. A lot of that at stake here. So I actually did a smart thing. And that was I asked somebody who had more experience than me. I went to Rabbi Ilan Siegel, who was another Rebbe in Beit Yerushalayim at the time. He's now running a women's seminary that's up the block over here. And I asked him, do you have any ideas, you know, how to explain the situation? He says, why don't you show him the Rambam Mor Nevuchad? Of course, the Rambam Mor Nevuchad. What are you referring to? So he said, the Rambam Mor Nevuchad says, why is the Torah emphasized so much, Laman Tizkar, to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim? Why is the mitzvah, so many different mitzvahs are pointing to Yetzias Mitzrayim? Why is it so important? It's because if you remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, you know, you believe in the fact that Yetzias Mitzrayim happened, it once happened already. The Jewish people were taken out of Golis and led to Eretz Yisrael, a redemption happened, a Mashiach came, a Moshe Rabbeinu came, and led the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. If it happened already once before, then it can happen again. If you believe in a Yetzias Mitzrayim, then you can believe in a Mashiach. And sure enough, I went back to Shir, I asked this guy, you believe in Yetzias Mitzrayim? Yeah, there's evidence for all the religions, any historical book gives, everyone believes in the Exodus story, it's widespread, there's maybe even archaeological evidence for it. He said, so if you believe in that it can happen once before, you believe it can happen again. And he bought the argument. And he took off. Actually, this guy currently is one of the rabbis now teaching in Yeshiva University. Now that's as an aside. The Torah tells us actually something a little different. The Torah in the beginning of our parsha, which answers our first question, is why did God harden his heart? So it's the second pasuk in this week's parsha. Vayom Hashem Moshe bo el paro ki ani hichbarati el libo ve'leiv avadav leman shiti ototai ela b'kibo uleman tisaper be'oznecha I'm sorry, be'oznei bincha uben bincha es asher yisalalti v'mitzrayim es ososai v'asher samti bam. The whole point of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole point, the whole mitzvah, and why did God harden his heart? In order that the children should ask. Heard that answer before? The children should ask? Is that the Seder? Why? Hold it to the children. The answer is that in order that you should tell the story. God is hardened Pharaoh's heart, not to punish him, because he wants the story to be an awesome story. Because you're going to tell this story to your children, and your children's children, they're going to tell their children, and so on and so forth. God hardens Pharaoh's heart so that he doesn't send out the Jewish people too early, because then the story won't be as awesome. He wants the story to be 10 Makos strong story. He wants to be this, one of the greatest stories to tell all time. That's what Torah says. Leman tisaper be'oznei bincha v'encha es asher salati mitzrayim. They, in order to say, you can tell the story to your children, your grandchildren, the havoc I wrought on Mitzrayim. That's why God, so we can tell a story. There's a famous American author, which maybe Akiva has heard of, probably the only one in the room, Paul Auster. Yes? Paul Auster? No? Anyone? New York Trilogy? So Paul Auster has the following quote. Stories only happen to those who are able to tell them. Stories only happen to those who are able to tell them. Think about that for a second. So it would seem also that stories only happen to the nations that are able to tell stories. This whole story happens. Story of Mitzrayim, the Eser Makos. So that we will be able to have a story to tell. We've been telling this story for 3,000 years. And telling this story for 3,000 years has created even more stories. And as such, we also read current events in light of the stories that we have told and experienced. When I was your age, a little bit younger, so there was a very important issue that every Jew was, almost every Jew, certainly every Orthodox Jew was involved in. And that was the students' struggle for the Soviet Jewry. It was one of the most famous refuseniks. They're called refuseniks because they were refused entry or exit to go to Eretz Israel. One of the famous refuseniks, hopefully you'll get a chance to meet him sometime this year, is a man by the name of Natan Sharansky. Anyone here ever heard of him before? Anatoly Natan Sharansky, who right now they're talking about being the next president of the State of Israel. And I think he would get a lot of support. So when I was growing up, when I was in high school, he was the most famous refusenik. He was somebody who desperately wanted to leave Russia, Soviet Union, and was held in jail for as a result of his wanting to leave Russia. His wife Avital Sharansky had actually was able to get out, and Reb Benny Eisner, who was, you've heard of before, you've heard of many times, was a Rebbe here in Yeshiva. He together with a few other families, started a movement to release, get Natalia Sharansky released. And that the office of that movement began in Benny's apartment. And then became, that apartment was right here, where Rabbi Fuchs lives. That the story of Mitzrayim was a story that affected us, Jewish people, that when the slogan for to release the Soviet Jews was "Let my people go." And so we went to these rallies, as a high school kid going to these rallies, "Let my people go, let my people go." And then later on when I was in college, it was, the slogan was "Direct flights to Israel." Then already the wall had come down. They were letting Jews out of, but they weren't allowing them to go straight to Israel. They had to go first to Europe, to Germany, maybe to America, and only then could they go. They couldn't go directly to Israel. So the slogan became "Direct flights to Israel." That wasn't a slogan from the Torah, but "Let my people go." Shlach et ami. Moshe Rabbeinu said it, and that's what we repeated. The story of Yetzias Mitzrayim became the story of the Soviet Jewry. The Egyptians, or possibly the Jews, built the pyramids. And that was a magnificent monument that would withstand the sands of time. But the Jewish people don't necessarily have magnificent monuments that withstand time. All we have is a kotel, not a monument. Everything else has been destroyed. It's the only remnant of the Beit HaMikdash. But what we do have is we have stories. We have stories that we can never forget. Stories that we've handed down. And that has kept us an eternal people. It's those stories that we tell. It's the same story. The same story has been told and retold and retold. And that makes us an Am HaNetzach that is not afraid. Shalom mifachei miderech arukah, from a long journey. Because we know it's happened before, it's going to happen again. If we're still telling this story, then we're going to this is going to have a good ending. It's going to have a great ending. And we never forget. We never forget what has happened to us, whether it was in Mitzrayim or whether it was 70 years ago. Tell a story. There's a comedian in Israel. His name is Yisrael Campbell. Anyone ever hear of him? Very interesting guy. He's a convert. Grew up Irish Catholic. He's now Yisrael Campbell. He used to be known as Yisrael Goldstein. He has a very funny routine. He actually has I think he had like an off-Broadway show for a while called Circumcise Me, because he actually has been circumcised. Tells us he's been circumcised 3 times, because when he converted, first he converted to Reform, then Conservative, and then Orthodox. So he got 3 circumcisions. I'm not going to remind you of the story of the last year. Anyway, so. So as a comedian, I know this because comedians have told me this, is that people always come over and try to tell them jokes. You know, like, oh, use this one, try this one. So this guy comes over to him in shul and says, I got a great joke for you. He goes, you want to tell me a joke in shul? He says, yeah, 1 second, let me just... Tell the son, no, go over there for a minute. He goes, you want to tell me a joke in shul, and your son can't hear it. And this is what you want to do. He goes, yeah. He goes, knock, knock. You want to tell me a knock, knock joke in shul that your son can't hear? Yeah. He goes, okay, I'll go. Who's there? So he says, Holocaust. He says, you want to tell me a knock, knock Holocaust joke in shul? That's what you want to do now. Knock, knock, Holocaust too. He says, but you said you're never going to forget. Pretty good. We're not supposed to forget these things. We're not supposed to forget. And we don't. We don't forget. The Sefer Yetzira, which is a Kabbalistic Sefer, first thing the Sefer Yetzira says is that God created the world through a story. He created the world, the Lashon is Hashem barat olam ayidei sipur. Okay? In other words, this existence, our existence, is really one long story. We are part of a story. And therefore the Torah is not a book of laws, as is the Havamina of that Rashi, that Medrash. Why do you start the Torah from HaKodesh HaZelachem? Because that's the first mitzvah. The Havamina is that Torah is a book of laws. Torah is telling us all the mitzvahs and all the averos. This is what the mitzvahs are. 613 mitzvahs. Start HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's when the Jewish people got the first mitzvah. That's where you should start the Torah. Torah is a book of laws. The maskana is no. No, yes, the Torah does contain laws in it. There are laws, and it's This is the source of all the laws. But the Torah is a storybook. The Torah is telling us a story. So it begins with the beginning of the story, the beginning of creation. And the Torah tells us this story because we have to tell God's story. This is God's story and the story of the Jewish people. And how God chose the Jewish people and gave them the chosen land. And we have to know the story. We have to know the story of God. We have to know the story of creation. We have to know the story of the Jewish people. We have to know the story of why we're here. If we don't know the story of why we're here, then we don't deserve to be here. Now, a story is not just a product of our existence. The story is actually the driving force, and it's what gives meaning to our existence. The quote that I mentioned to you earlier: stories only happen to those who are able to tell them. What does that mean? Stories only happen to those who are able to tell them. What that means is that storytellers, they look at life very differently than everybody else. They look at life as a story, and they look to find the story in life. They look to find how to read what's happening, and how to find meaning in what's happening. Everything that happens to us, if we find ourselves in a certain place, a certain time, a certain situation, there is a message here. There's a story here. And a storyteller is aware of that. He's constantly looking for those opportunities to learn something from that experience. And that's why he has a story to tell. He knows he has to tell the story, so he has to find meaning in what happens. Most people go through life not without that awareness. And chaval, it's such a waste. Because the truth is, all of us should be storytellers. Every single one of us. As a Jew, I am a storyteller. Sometimes we only think of it when we become parents, I have to tell the stories to my kids. But the truth is that even now, before I'm a parent, I have a mitzvah l'safer, Yitzis Mitzrayim. Not only the parents have a mitzvah to tell. We asked the question earlier, is what do you do when there's a machlokas in the Medrash? We have five different stories. What happened when the Jewish people left Egypt? Was it that they left armed? Did they live with only 1/5 of Jewish people? 1/50th? 1/500th? Was it that five times the amount of Jewish people joined the Jewish people? What's correct? And the answer is, we don't know what's correct. We don't know. And you know what? It's not that important what's correct. There's a five opinions in the Medrash. Five Tanoim, different opinions. What's important, said Rav Kook. Rav Kook said this in a letter. A very, very important letter. And this is a very important teaching on its own. What's important for us is not who is right in those different opinions. And you'll find this is throughout any story in the Torah, you'll have machlokas between mefarshim. What's important for us is not to know what's right. It's important to know the different opinions. And then what's important is that what is the message according to each opinion? That's what's important for us. What do we take from that? Whether the Medrash is supposed to be taken literal or not, sometimes we can know. The Rambam says not all Medrash are meant to be taken literally. Some are meant to be taken literally, some are not. So, myself, a novice reader of Medrash, may not know which ones are meant to be taken literally and which ones are not. It's not so important. What's important is what is the message. I was... When I was in the States, I was talking to somebody and he was telling me about a certain shir that he used to go to. Because I can't go to that shir anymore because the rabbi always quotes the midrashim that's so far-fetched and I just can't. So I said to him, what's the difference? Like, the point is, what's important is the message. Whether that you take the measures literally or not, that's the shot and what happened. I don't know. You don't know either. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. What's important is what's the lesson we learned from that measure. And that's what Rav Kook says. It's not important to know. It's less important, I should say. Not that it's not important. It's less important to know what happened. What's important to know is what's the message. Each one is telling a different story. What is the message they're trying to impart upon us? That's what you should look for. That's what you should try to understand. So the title of this shiur is actually called From Leaving Mitzrayim to Leaving Las Vegas. As some of you may know, part of my trip, I got to go to Las Vegas for the first time. Interesting place. But on my way to Las Vegas, I had a very interesting thing happened to me. I was flying from San Diego to Seattle. And so I was in the airport in San Diego waiting to board. So I'm always reminded of I have an uncle. His name is Steve Savitsky. Lives in Woodmere, Hewlett, and. He travels a lot. He used to be the president of the Orthodox Union of the OU. So he travels a lot, also for business, but also for the OU, representing the OU. And he has this thing that whenever he travels, he tries, like consciously, makes a decision that he's going to make a minimum of 5 Kiddush Hashems. That's what he does. Like, he looks for opportunities. He's looking for a story. Looking to create a story. So he always wears a yarmulke wherever he goes, wherever he travels. Doesn't make a difference where, how dangerous, or how few Jews are there. He always wears his yarmulke because he's looking for those opportunities. And he has some great stories. Great stories, which I'll share one of them with you. He once was traveling. He was in the airport. He comes and there's he comes to the gate where they're about to board, and it seems like to be a delay in the boarding. And there's this woman who's standing at the talking to one of the flight attendants. You know who handled the people at the gate. And she sees that this woman is like hysterical crying. So he was traveling actually with a business partner, and he goes over to this woman again, because that's his thing, is like looking for opportunities. And he goes over and he says, is everything okay? So this woman who's like, all her makeup is all run down her face already. She's carrying this big white folding bag, and she turns. Oh, this airline's being impossible. They promised me that there was going to be room on this flight. I'm getting married tomorrow, and I'm holding. This is my wedding dress. It's been all pressed and ready to be worn. And they told me there's going to be an empty flight, and I'll be able to there'll be a seat open that I can hang my dress over. But the flight is completely packed, and now there's no place I can put my dress. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm getting married tomorrow. My dress is going to be ruined. So he said, what if we could, lay the dress over a few people? I said, yeah, but who's going to agree to that? So he goes over, says to the flight attendants, is there a way that you can, arrange that my colleague and I can sit next to this woman so that we can sit together and we'll lay the dress over the three of us? There was a 3-hour flight about to go there. He said, you'd be willing to do that? Yeah. It's going to, help her. Wow, that's so nice of you. Yeah, well, okay, do it. They changed the tickets, they changed the seating. And he said, what's your name? We want to thank you. He said, I'm Steve Savitsky, president of the Orthodox Union. He wanted to make a Kiddush Hashem. So they got on the plane, he wanted to thank Mr. Steve Savitsky and his colleague, I forgot his name, president of the Orthodox Union, who did this wonderful feat so we can get on our way. So he always looks at the opportunity. So I always he had that in the back of my head. So whatever it is, I was actually on the phone to my wife and about to board the plane. I see one of those pillows that people wear on their necks. It's on the floor. So I saw a guy walking the other way. I said, "Hey, is that yours?" I said, "No, it's not mine. I don't know." So normally I would just "Okay, it's not yours. I'm a New Yorker. Just move on, right? Continue on my way." But then I reminded my uncle. I said, "Okay, there's an opportunity here." Pick up the pillow, and I walk over to where a mass of people are, and who, anyone loses pillow, Hashemis Aveda. So sure enough, there's one woman. Yeah, it's my pillow. Oh, thank you so much. I board the plane. I'm in row 27. Okay, row 27 is basically the back of the plane. It's not just a big plane. Row 27. The plane is packed. Next to me is sitting a man sitting next to me, and then he's in the middle, and then the window seat is open. But the plane's filling up, packed. The overhead bins are filling up. So in walks the plane. The stewardess is already saying, "Okay, we're getting ready to close the door." Oh, great! Maybe we'll have the one seat open, and then finally, there's this one woman walking down the aisle with a pillow around her neck and three other bags with her. One of them happens to be a dog in one of those cages. And we're like, "No! Ah." Okay, so we have to get out of our seats. She there's no room. She's looking for overhead. No room in the overhead bin. She takes the dog, puts it in the by her feet. And then she has two other big bags. Stewardess comes. "Listen, you can't leave your bags there. The dog's fine under your feet, but the other bags you have to put it on the overhead bin. There's no room. I'll take it. I'll put it somewhere in the front of the plane." She says, no, but I really would like it. I need it near me." "Well, can I put it under their seats?" Me and the guy next to me. I'm like, one thing to find a girl's pillow, one thing, make Kiddush Hashem, but it's a 3-hour flight. I need my space. But I didn't say anything, but the guy next to me says, "Yeah, it's fine." "What?" "Yeah, it's fine. You can put it in my thing." "So what am I going to do? I'm wearing a yarmulke. What am I going to do?" "So fine, yeah. Go ahead." So she puts it in. "It's fine. I'll just for takeoff, and then when we can, I'll take it back." "Okay, fine." So they she puts the stuff down. Take off. She takes it back. No big deal. As we're approaching, getting close to landing, so this guy next to me starts talking to me. He says, when's Hanukkah? Oh, it was already. Because I have people I work with. I want to wish them happy Hanukkah. Explain to them, when's it 70,000 years? Thanksgiving. He says, where are you? He started asking me where I'm from. "I'm from, live in Israel." "Oh, Israel's nice. I'd love to visit there." Then he hands me his card. Hands me this card. I look at his card. Brad Owen, Lieutenant Governor, State of Washington. I'm like, "Lieutenant Governor? What are you sitting back here in row 27? In the middle seat!" "In the middle seat. You know Brad Owen?" "Never heard of him, right?" "He's your Lieutenant Governor." "He's sitting in the middle seat." I said, "What are you doing in the middle seat?" He goes, "Well, it's a private trip. I'm not going to charge the..." I said, "Okay, but the middle seat." He goes, "Well, let me introduce my wife. She was sitting one row in front of him in the middle seat. Couldn't even get two seats together. Lieutenant Governor, State of Washington." Anyway, so I'm like, I was blown away that this, first of all, then I was thinking, look at this guy. And he was willing to, like this woman with a, wanted to put her bags there, and he was willing to do it. Would anyone from, you know, any governor, lieutenant governor from New York, any other normal state, would they be willing to do that? Sorry, Brad, if you're listening. But I don't think so. But then I thought, you know what? I thought, you know, maybe that's exactly why he did it. Because maybe he thought maybe there's some people around him. We were flying, actually, it was Alaska Airlines flying to Seattle. So they probably, you know, maybe he thought there were going to be other people going to see him and say, he's lieutenant governor. You know, what kind of, is he a nice guy? Is he a jerk? Is he willing to do something? Maybe that was his motivation for being willing to have this woman put her stuff by his feet. Maybe just a nice guy from Washington. Anyway, so that's what I took from that story. It happened to be that we're talking about, I was going to Las Vegas. I told him, I'm going to Las Vegas. I'm going to this convention for Holocaust survivors. So it's really interesting. I said, you know what, it's interesting because I just recently had seen a YouTube video. I don't know how many people, probably some people have seen this YouTube video of Rabbi Lau when he took President Obama around Yad Vashem in the summer when President Obama was here. And he, on this video, he says to President Obama, a year ago I went to Seattle, Washington. And when I was in Seattle, we were opening a Holocaust memorial. And when I got there, there was an elderly man who was actually, if I remember correctly, he was wearing his uniform from World War II with all decorated medals and so on. And he came over to Rabbi Lau and he says, Rabbi Lau, I want to apologize. He says, you want to apologize? Yeah, I was part of I was in the army when we came and liberated the camps. So he goes, you want to apologize? I want to thank you. And he says, and he turns to President Obama, and I want to thank you on behalf of, you know, you as a representative of the American people. I want to thank you for the troops liberating us from Buchenwald. The American troops liberated me. And I have wonderful memories of the American people. I want to thank you and the American people for that. But this man says, well, that's why I want to apologize. So I want to apologize because we came too late. We should have got there earlier. And so Rabbi Lau turned to President Obama and says, you know, let's make sure the next time you're not too late. There's a regime in Iran that's seeking to destroy us just like Hitler did. Let's not be too late again. Very, very strong words. We look for those opportunities. And what I took from Brad Owen, Lieutenant Governor of the State of Washington, was that because he's Lieutenant Governor, he has to live up to, you know, his position. Other people may see and notice him, know, and say, you know, how is he acting? So we as Jewish people have to always consider, how are we acting? People are going to see us. And it's so hard, especially when you're flying, and everyone gets so tense and stressed out when you're flying on a plane. Everyone wants their space, you know, the overhead big companion, everyone, you know, running to get onto a plane. I'll tell you the flip side of the story. This is an unbelievable story. Shana Beck guys probably heard this last year. But the flip story is that I'm going again to the States on Motzei Shabbos, January 26th. That's basically the flight when all the parents who come from winter break, that's when they're going back, that flight. I go almost every time I fly, I go on this flight. And I always have a story from that flight. So two or three years ago, I actually like to get on early because I usually have a lot of stuff with me. I want to get space on the overhead bin. So I come there. I'm actually one of the first people on the flight. And there's a couple sitting in front of me. And there's, that's it, just two people sitting in front of me. And there's a lot of stuff already on the in the overhead bin. So I find space for my bag there. And then I go sit down. I'm an aisle seat, my row is empty. And then the guy sitting in front of me, then he goes and he closes the thing. Okay. There was still plenty of room in there. But he closes the thing shut. And everyone's, the plane's filling up. And actually, I'm ruining the story. This is not the flight back to the States during that time. It was actually, it was a flight earlier. It was the flight coming to, sorry, it was going from the States to Israel. States to Israel, okay? But like around this time of year, when people are coming to visit. States to Israel, I'm sorry. States to Israel. Anyway, so the plane's filling up, and looks like I'm going to have the whole row to myself. They're saying, okay, we're about to close the doors. And there's a then, once again, no. Oh. That's my seat in the window. Okay, and this guy's got a ton of stuff. Everything, the whole plane's already filled. All the overhead, he starts opening up the overhead bins. He's got like three or four bags. He's got like, I don't know, it's one of these roll-up poster things. And he's no space. So I'm being, you know, looking for opportunities to help. I say, you know what, I think there's actually room in our, the one right, you know, the bin right over us. He goes, yeah. So I opened the thing, and he says, look, we're just, the people in front of us had put in their coats on top. He says, we'll just take out their stuff and you'll put your stuff underneath. So the guy sitting in one row, it's a guy with a kippah, and him with the, and his wife sitting there in the row in front of me, and he says, there's no room in there. I said, no, there's room, we're gonna just take out your coats and just take out your stuff and he's gonna put his stuff underneath, he'll put your stuff on top. I don't want you ruining my coat. I said, it's okay, just gonna. So I actually take out his coat, and then the guy gets up and he says, I don't want you touching my coat. Grabs the coat from me, puts it back in the thing, and shuts the thing closed. So I'm like, okay, I'm done. I sit down, and the guy says, because the guy goes, what's your problem? There's plenty of room there. He goes, you expect to come, you know, to get on the 10 minutes before we're about to take off, and you expect to have room in the overhead bin? It's like, he calls over the stewardess. The stewardess says, you know, can you help me here? This, you know, oh, we'll find other space for you, it's okay. He goes, you know, with this guy, whatever, just, it's fine, leave him, we'll find another space. They find another place for him. Sits down, and that was the end of the story, or so I thought. Come back to yeshiva 2 days later. I'm sitting in my office, and there's a knock on my door. We're here to see Rabbi Olshan. And who is it? It's the couple who's sitting in front of me. So I look at them, they look at me. And I say to them, can I take your coat? So, the kid didn't get into yeshiva either. You see, my friends, life is a story. We are part of that story. We have a story to tell. We go to Poland because we want to, first of all, know this story. We want to be able to tell the story. But we also want to go there and say, this story is still alive. We are here. Nazis are not. Don't think that you got rid of us. Because we're still here telling the story. And we go there and we sing, we dance in places that you wouldn't expect it. And we sing the story, we sing the song of Am HaNetzach. Lo mefachei miderech arukah. We're not afraid. We're not afraid. We are an eternal people because we still tell the story. And we have to realize that we are part of that story. We are the main characters of that story. When we live life, we realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And if I'm here, at this particular place, at this particular time, in this particular situation, then there's something to be learned from this. There's a lesson to be learned in everything in life. And that's if I understand that I'm part of a story. The Torah is a storybook. We are going to write the last, or we're going to be the last chapters of that story. And you have to ask yourself, is that, you know, how do I want the story to be told? How do I want myself to be portrayed in that story? What are they going to be saying about us? So not only do I live life and look for those lessons to be learned from all those opportunities, from the situation I find myself in. And I can tell you that in every single time that I tried, every single plane that I got on, or every single airport, there was always someone who reminded me that I was a Jew. You're Jewish, right? Oh, you the steward who's, you know, serving drinks and giving out everything, you know, he whispers into my ear, he goes, I support Israel, you know. To hell with the Arabs. I support Israel. Didn't say that to anybody else. And if you think that by not wearing a yarmulke they don't know, you know, I was when I went to Las Vegas, so I was a little, honestly, I was a little embarrassed. So I would put on a hat, you know. So I'm walking in the hotel I was in, the Venetian, very very fancy hotel. So I'm walking with my hat. There's a coffee bean there. Everything's kosher. I'm walking from the coffee bean. I buy some stuff. I'm walking through, and then there's this in the Venetian. They have these. It's like a very fancy mall. So they have a stand. They're selling like different accessories for cell phones. So of course, who is it run by?
Israelis,
right? Any mall in Israel, in America. Selling cell phone accessories, Israeli. So, you know, they see me with my hat. Of course, you know, I don't look Jewish. They say to me, Tizkor lo latzei mitchum Shabbat. You know, these weren't religious Israelis. Lo latzei mitchum Shabbat. Oh, okay. Okay, Shabbat Shalom. It was Friday morning. Anyway, so you can't, everyone knows you're Jew. No matter how much you try to hide it. They know. And our job is to recognize that. We can't hide the fact. And be proud of it. Look for those opportunities to tell the stories. Look for the opportunities to make a Kiddush Hashem. Because that will create the best stories for you, for the Jewish people. And eventually you will be able to tell the greatest story of the redemption of the Jewish people. Have a good evening. Just one second.